This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. This is a podcast of two parts. For the first half, we're going to hear about the building, and for the second part, we'll hear about its inhabitants and what they do. There's one church named after St. Edmund, King and Martyr in the City of London, and this one is the subject of this episode. Having said that, there is another church in the city that used to be named after this saint, but today is called St. Sepulchre, but you'll have to wait for that in another podcast. St. Edmund, not many people realise, was the original patron saint of England. He was an Anglo-Saxon king born on Christmas Day in 841 AD, and he died a Christian martyr's death at the hands of the invading Vikings when he refused to give up his faith. He was tied to a tree and used as targets for the Viking archers. His head was then cut off. It's the city of Bury St. Edmunds that's named after him. Although his buried body has been dug up a few times over, first it was sent to France, and now apparently some of it rests in Arundel Castle. It was Edward III who replaced him with St. George as the English patron saint, but churches across the land do recall him, and so do the people who are trying to reinstate him as the English patron saint once again. A church has stood on this site in the City of London since the 12th century, before Edmund had been replaced by George. And here I spoke to Tony Tucker about the present building. So we're on Lombard Street, opposite the smallish St. Edmund King and Martyr. Can you describe it from the outside?
Yes, it is small, and it's the only church remaining in Lombard Street, centre of the city's banking industry in the past. Simple church from the outside. It's odd in that it is not east-west orientated, which all churches normally are. It's one of only three in the city that are north-south. So you go in through the south door, and the altar, which should be in the east, is in the north. And it's a Wren building. He restored it back in the late 17th century. It's got a typical Wren tower with quite an interesting steeple above. It's a lead steeple. All Wren steeples are different, of course. This one's like an upturned trumpet, and may have had some of Hawksmoor's influence. But it's very nice inside. I like it. It's a neat design.
Right, should we go in, Tony? So, Tony, tell me about the interior of the church.
Right. It's a single aisle-less church, just a nave, although it does have, unusually for Wren, a little bit of a protruding chancel where the altar is. It has a light, a window in the top, which was added long after Wren, and it has had some Victorian additions. It's got a bit of Victorian glass, and it's got quite a good reredos with paintings of Moses and Aaron by a famous Victorian artist called William Etty. It has fine door cases on either side of the altar. That's 17th century Wren period, but good examples of the wood carving of Wren's craftsmen. Original Wren pulpit, original Wren font and font cover. And the font cover has got the four evangelists, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, shown painted gold in little sculpted figures.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Do you know anything about above the altar? There's what looks like a fresco on the wall.
Yes, unusually, this church not only has a very small sort of chancel extension at where Wren's churches normally have a flat wall, but above it there's a painted dome. The painting is Victorian again, but it's unusual in a city church. So it's a much overlooked church. People walk past it a lot, but it's got some interesting features. It's a nice example of the many churches that Wren was building in the city in the late 17th century.
The church contains a hodgepodge of original features and modern additions, and one of the additions is a rather large modern oil painting, which we don't see much of in the city churches. So this one stands out, and it's by Miles Richmond. It's from the 20th century, and you'll find it on the wall to the left of the sanctuary. It's supposed to be inspired by the Duino elegies of the German language poet Rainer Maria Rilke, a collection which explores beauty and existential suffering.
Are there any associations with the church? Are there any particular people linked to it?
Yeah, perhaps the most famous connection in modern times, certainly, is the Reverend William Stoddart Kennedy, who's remembered as a rector of this, or a vicar of this church, in the 20th century. And he's famous for his exploits in the First World War, when, as a chaplain in the British Army, he acquired the nickname of Woodbine Willie. So Woodbine Willie is remembered in the church here.
Woodbine Willie was the vicar here just after the First World War. He had volunteered as a padre during the conflict and showed his bravery by saving wounded men stuck in no man's land during heavy gunfire. He was called Woodbine Willie, by the way, because he would hand out Woodbine cigarettes to the injured and dying troops. This church didn't escape unscathed from the First World War too.
Interestingly, and the thing that no one spots, is under the altar there is a piece of glass with fragments of what in fact are the bomb that damaged the church in the war, because this church did suffer in both First and Second World Wars, strangely. Bomb from a Zeppelin in the First World War and also in the Second World War. It wasn't badly damaged, but it has had some restoration. But it is pretty original, but now very open and deprived of a lot of its furnishings, and is used by the London Centre for Spirituality.
And it's this same bomb fragment that Julie Dunstan from the London Centre for Spiritual Direction picks out as an important feature of the building. Do you feel there's anything special about the building itself, and if so, what?
Well, it's special, of course, because it has been cleared of pews and offers a wide open space for exploration. That's both real and symbolic, I think. Of the features here, I might just point out the exploded bomb underneath the altar. It's encased in glass, and on the glass is etched the words of St. Teresa of Avila. And those words are, "Let nothing disturb you, let nothing frighten you. All things pass. God never changes. Patience obtains all things. They who have God find they lack nothing. God alone suffices."
This quotation also seems relevant for the life of the City of London churches. I spoke to Julie about the London Centre for Spiritual Direction and its role not just here in the building, but beyond these walls.
So the centre promotes spiritual direction in different ways. We provide resources and support for those in the community looking for it.
Right.
To that end, we have a large network of people who are available. We have an online directory of spiritual directors for anyone looking for this kind of support.
So people would come here to find somebody who could help guide them in their spiritual lives. Is that right? And it was almost like a mentor kind of
character.
That's
right, yes. It's like a spiritual mentor. Spiritual direction as a name is a slight misnomer, because we're not really directing people per se. We are helping them to listen to the direction of the spirit in their life. But yes, people will find that they want help talking about their spiritual life, discovering who God is, and people will come at all different stages of that. So maybe completely inarticulate about God. Maybe they don't want to even use the word God, but they want to explore their spiritual life. All the way through to people who are very clear that they are Christians.
So that makes me think, who are the people that are looking for spiritual direction? Crudely put, what's the demographic, if there is one?
We have people from every denomination and every persuasion within those denominations. The very real experience of ecumenical community is rare. One of my students was only recently saying to me how profound an experience it was for him to be in a formation program alongside such a diverse group of Christians, all respecting, enjoying, and learning from each other. We are a Christian spiritual direction center.
Mm.
And we make no apologies for that. But we are very welcoming of anyone outside of that tradition, from different faiths.
I'm going around all of the churches in the City of London and meeting the people who are using the churches in very different ways. You said that this is a place where all those people come together and share their forms of worship. And respectfully was the word you used. But do you ever find there are disputes because everybody does have a different approach? Or is it just an acceptance? You decide to do this and you decide to do that?
It's a really good question. But because spiritual direction is by its nature not about doctrine or dogma, but it is by nature about how we hear and listen and touch the life of God within us. But we do welcome those who might come from different faith traditions or none, because we learn a great deal from them. So we do have people coming on the courses, for instance, who are coming from the Jewish tradition. We have a Sufi in our training at the moment, and Unitarian. It isn't just about infighting about who believes what. It isn't right and wrong. It is about something much more profound. I think the word for that is contemplative.
Yeah. So you wouldn't necessarily say, given the location of this church being in the heart of the City of London, that the people who use the centre, they're not bankers or lawyers or are they?
Sometimes they are, but it's perfectly true that our ministry does not immediately and deliberately go out to the local city. So the centre is a physical space, and so much as offices and training happens here, but it goes well beyond these walls, throughout Greater London and beyond.
Does the church building have any bearing on your practice?
Well, I think we are grateful to be in one of the city churches with its history, and it's soaked in prayer and it's in the middle of the business of a big city. I think it's probably a symbol of our need to go on being relevant. It keeps us on our toes. Mm. We can't be set apart I'd love to be in some beautiful rural setting where peace was exuding from the trees and the lakes and the sky.
Yes.
Instead, we are here, and we need to know that what we're doing is relevant to the world of people walking past our door. With all the bombs exploding in our world, literally and figuratively, God is in our midst offering peace. In spiritual direction, we want to help people to discover and cultivate that peace for themselves and for the City of London and for our world. Mm.